Welcome to I Got Ish to Say podcast with your host, Alfonso McClendon. This is going to be the most challenging, controversial conversation that you ever have. My literary hero, James Baldwin, once said, "Not everything faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed unless you face it." This conversation will be about talking about the systems, not the people that control us. With this conversation is going to be raw, uncut, unfiltered, straight, no chaser. We're going to talk about things that we talk about in private, but yet we're going to have this public conversation. We're here to bring all the ish to the table. But with the ish, we hope to bring change, challenge, and impartation, which impact the community. So welcome again to I Got Ish to Say. Enjoy this journey with us as we have these conversations. I often say there are Michael Jordans in every community, but they never have an opportunity to shine because they don't have a platform. We're not here to seek out the famous. We're here to seek the people who have a voice, who have something to say that's overlooked because they don't have money, they're overlooked because they don't have a platform, overlooked because they don't have the prestige. But we're going to have raw, uncensored conversations with everyday folk. But these folks got a conversation that will impact a community, change a community, challenge a community, and we're going to uplift the community because we're going to deal with the systems that destroy our community. I got ish to say, it's coming straight for you. So like, subscribe, follow us. Enjoy the journey because we got ish to say. Welcome to I Got Ish to Say, one of the most challenging, controversial conversations you will ever have. Today, I'm honored to have one of my special friends of over 30 years come and sit down and have a conversation with me about the heights, the lows, the downfalls, and now the rebuild of his life. His name is Andre Mays. This story is going to be compelling. It's going to be impactful. But most of all, it's going to be inspiring. So welcome, Andre, to I Got Ish to Say. Man, this conversation been over 2 years.
Right.
And I thank you for encouraging me because every now and then I look at my inbox, hey, man, what's going on with the podcast? What's going on with the podcast? And so we're here today.
Right.
But we're going to talk about a compelling story, your story.
Most definitely.
And I believe your story is going to help the youth of today and tomorrow. And it's going to transform some lives. I remember 11th grade. Pikeson High School, we were lab mates in Dr. T. Lee class in science. Right. We used to cut up all the time, man.
Most definitely.
But this particular day, man, while we was picking a friend of ours about a girl that everybody in the class liked, I asked you a question. And I want to know if you remember that question. You said to me, after I asked you, I said, Andre, what you going to be in life? And you said, I'm going to be one of the biggest drug dealers in Jacksonville. That came true. Do you remember that?
Well, basically, I can't say that I exactly remember, but it sounded like something in my youth that I would say.
Right, right.
Thinking it was cool and, you know, so forth. So
what made you want to be a drug dealer?
Thinking back, I was going to Mary McLeod Bethune, sixth grade center, you know, on the north side in the Moncrief area. My mother used to go with a guy named Jack. Matter of fact, name was Jack Johnson. So, you know, he would pick me up from school, take me to school using my mother's car. And I remember one day he had picked me up. My mother had a burgundy Regal. And we stopped, maybe it was like on 33rd Street. And there was a guy, Jack Flight, the guy now, he was in a goldish Cadillac Chevelle, young guy. And I don't forget his name to this day. That's been over 45 years ago. Jack called him Lil Larry. So, you know, I'm sitting on the passenger side, you know, sixth grade student. But, you know, I'm inquisitive. And Jack asked him, did he have some weed? And he said, yeah, follow me. And we went to it was a grayish duplex. Lil Larry pulled up in the Chevelle. Jack got out, but I stayed in the car. They walked inside. I remember it was an older black lady. And I guess, you know, now I'm thinking back that, you know, she must be working for Lil Larry. So, and when Lil Larry came out, he had like a bag full of money. I never forget, a brown bag full of money. Mm-hmm. So, Jack, get back in. I see he got the weed in his hand. And I'm going to tell you how I first knew about weed. So, and this started happening on a constant basis. You know, me and Jack would go to that same apartment. I see Lil Larry with these bags of money. So, you know, I'm listening. I said, oh, okay, well, he's selling weed. And Jack had a nephew called Lily. Every morning when I went to Jack's sister house to get ready, you know, to walk back to Mary McLeod Bethune, his nephew, he would take me some time. He would be smoking weed. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I actually got introduced with using drugs.
Okay.
When I was in the sixth grade at Mary McLeod Bethune. And I'm talking about, I used to go to sixth grade high as hell.
Lit.
Mm-hmm. So seeing little Larry, that's what made me want to be a drug dealer. But, you know, I look back on that, you know, I got grandsons.
Right.
And I say, you know, I don't know what my grandsons to experience that, especially at so young.
Right.
Sixth grade, you going to school every day, high. And it shows you how you can hang around the wrong person or an older person. Like I said, I was in sixth grade.
Right.
I'd be Larry, you know, they called him Lily. Mm-hmm. You know, he was out of school, but he introduced me to using drugs. And I actually started liking it.
Right.
The way from the sixth grade until on when we was going to high school together.
Right.
I always smoked weed. And then my mother, you know, she never knew.
Never knew.
Yeah.
But when we talk about the drug game, how did you get your start?
Well, how I got my start was when we went to high school, you should remember him, Milkman.
Yeah.
Who we call Milkman.
Right.
You know, he was basically already hustling.
Right.
And, you know, seeing him, I remember he had his little Ford Ranger truck.
Yeah.
And just, I kind of got my start from him.
Okay.
Because in the 10th grade, I worked at Pizza Hut. You know, my first job, Pizza Hut, it was off Plymouth Avenue.
I remember.
And so, you know, I had money saved. And I remember me and Milkman talking. And, you know, he broke it down to me. And then I think the first thing that I ever bought, because, you know, crack was the thing then.
Right. Right.
Maybe like a quarter ounce.
Okay.
And from there, I just took off. And I was fortunate enough. That's why now some people in the game, you know, they never get connects.
Right.
But I was fortunate enough in high school, I was able to run across an older guy, and he liked me, and he the one really gave me my first opportunity. Until the day, this guy's still living. You know, I won't mention his name.
Right.
But he's probably maybe same age as my mother, probably mid-70s. And my mother hated him because she knew as I got started growing in the game, it wasn't because of him. And then, you know, I just branched off, you know, myself. But I'm going to tell you something that you probably never knew. I know you remember Lil Willie Freeman.
Yeah.
Lil Willie Freeman, the first one who took me to Miami, probably when I was like about 16, to buy a brick of cocaine. Yeah.
So when you say brick, you're talking about whole key.
Yes. It was because of him.
You know, 16 years old, you buy a whole key. And at that time, the street value of a whole key was maybe $50,000, $60,000.
No, sir. Around that time, I'm going to say, because I never paid that much for a kilo of cocaine. I'm going to say, you know, that's 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably could have been like 15. Yeah.
So at 16, you buy the kilo of cocaine for $15,000.
Right.
But when you break it down, sell it in the street, what was the value of that $15,000 worth of investment?
Shoot, probably about 70. You know, just to get off it fast.
At 16?
Yes.
16, you bought your first brick.
Right.
Elaborate on that for a little bit, because you're saying at 16, you're doing something that some grown folks wasn't even doing.
But no, right.
But at 16,
right,
you go to Miami, buy your first brick.
Right.
Bring it back. Because you want to get rid of it quick.
Right.
You done made 70 grand.
Right. And it's because, like the area, like now, the way my mother lived in the Paxton area, you know, I'm actually the first one that put crack in the area. And some guys know because they'd be like, well, who's the guy Andre made? And recently I was, you know, I go to my mother's house. She always want me to stop and get her a Diet Coke. So I was in the store, around right across by the Coca-Cola plant.
Uh-huh.
And when I got the car, a guy recognized me. He said, "What's up, Dre?" But I kind of vaguely, you know, recognized. He said, "Oh, I'm Bud, brother." I said, "What's up?" And then the other dude said, "Oh, that's Dre, the one who they be talking about who started that down the street." So it was really, it wasn't hard to make money then, because in that area, it was all white. It was all white, you know, customers. So, and you know, selling packs and to the guys in school, you know, I don't know if you knew, but you know, a lot of guys in school, I actually, you know, I gave them their first chance, you know, to hustle. You know, maybe I was from 2-3 ounces, someone went by. And one guy to this day, Derek, do you remember Derek? Red light skin Derek.
I remember Derek.
Yeah, he had a grandpa. So, you know, I used to, you know, they would buy 1/4 ounces, 1/2 ounces, and ounces. And it was another guy who went to school with us, and he got killed. I never forget his name, Antoine Banks.
I remember Antoine.
So, you know, it was, and, you know, they was from what? Is that Washington, Lincoln State?
Yeah.
So, you know, 4 or 5 of them, you know, I was giving a little work to her. Then, like I say, I had my first trap right around there by the Coca-Cola plant in the apartments behind the store. And, you know, we was, you know, and we was doing our thing. Right then, crack was at its height.
Right, right.
So, you know, it wasn't nothing to make $5,000 an hour on a Friday night, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. So, you know, it was at its height.
So, was it the lure of the fast money? Because you were smart in school, so you wasn't like a dummy in school.
Yeah, I was somewhat smart.
You wasn't a dummy. So what was it? Was it the lure of the money? Was it the fame? Was it the women? What was it that fueling this drug trafficking? Because now you're telling me something new, that we sitting in class, you already got trap houses, you already got people working for you while we in high school.
Right.
But you came to high school every day, you was fresh to death. I got to give you that. You was fresh to death. You was very jovial, because that's all we did in this teacher class, rank on each other at laugh. But here it is, now I'm learning that you already had an empire set up while we were still in high school. What was that driving force behind it for you?
Shoot, the money.
The money.
The money. The money. You know, to me.
But you had, your mother was working. She was a good mama. She wasn't like a bad mother. You had good parenting. Come from a good home.
My mother was an excellent mother, and she made 6 figures.
But see, that's the thing. Most kids who sell drugs at that age, they come from bad homes. Mama is not making it, but that's not your story.
No,
so it was nothing to really say, I need to do this. This is a decision you made for yourself.
Right, most definitely. The money. The nice things, as you remember, high school, I already had a car where eventually I got the car. That's when the truth involved, pearl paint job, the rags. So, you know, I had the colors. You know, it was what money could do. And, you know, 16, 17 years old, already having $100,000, $200,000 saved, it was about the money.
But was it ever time you felt that your family was in jeopardy because of what you did in the street?
No, because I'm just saying no, because I wasn't a slimy dude, you know, basically no. But looking back, as I started growing in the game, going down to Miami, meeting people. And one time on Facebook, I was telling my story, because numerous people that came to me and wanted me to tell my story.
Right.
Some on my shelf. I don't know you. I'm not telling you nothing about me.
Right.
But I met some Spanish dudes. The one time when I was on Facebook talking, I told it to where they was like, okay. I met them. I was at Luke's. I was at Luke's in Miami.
Okay.
That's when I had the orange bins. And the Spanish guys, they was parked next to me. And they're like, we never seen this car before you fought him. I say, I'm from Jacksonville. They say, for real? So, you know, we started talking. And, you know, they was like, well, maybe we need to, you know, really hook up. I never forget one of them names. His name was Alex. So, you know, we became friends. So, and they like, before we deal, you know, we got to know everything about you.
Right.
We don't want to take no lawsuits. We don't want to deal with no slimy shit. So, and I remember They came to Jacksonville. They bought me a couple of bricks. So they was like, if this continue to go on, we need to know. First they asked, is your mother alive? I said, yes. They say, well, we need to know where she worked. She said, I said, yeah, she worked. They say, well, we need a copy of her driving license. So I look back on all this and see how maybe, you know, the money was good, but the shit that we do for it.
Right.
Yeah, like if something happened, you know, somebody gonna have to pay.
Right.
So, and I actually went to my mother's house one day, got her driving license, and I know when she see this ahead is, you know, and made a copy of her. And I gave it to the Spanish dude. And looking back, I think one of them came to her house with me. She was like, who is that? I'm like, oh, that's my friend from school. So, and you know, I just look back on stuff like that and see that we do put our people, you know, in danger.
Yeah.
But anything could happen.
Right.
And, you know, Alex was cool, but his brother, you know, his brother, I guess, supposed to be in the muscle.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever. But, you know, I look back on all that stuff now and say, damn, was that shit even worth it?
Right.
Because they asked for the closest thing to you at that time, your mother.
Right.
So if something would have happened, your mother would have had to pay the price for your mistake.
Right. Right.
At the height of your career, tell me about the height of your career. I remember one day I was at my mother's house and I'm walking down the street. I hear this horn blowing, but I can't really hear the horn over the loud music. And I see this orange Benz coming down the street, flipped up, and you leaning in it, and you like you looking at me like, I did it, Peanut, I did it.
Right.
So at the height of your career, the cars, the jewelry, tell me about that.
I would say, you know, the height of my career, the way, you know, I had a nice chunk of money saved, and I was able to take trips. I was able, you know, I had 2-3 people who I could go to, I could get bricks from. And I just say I was comfortable, but at least I thought I was comfortable. But now looking back on all that, no, I wasn't comfortable.
During that particular time, it's safe to say that you influenced a lot of young people to follow your path.
Oh, most definitely. And guys will give me my credit. You know, they say that now. That's why, you know, I say sometimes that before guys had their first Chevy, I was already driving Benzes. So, yes. But I also look back on that now, that as we say, bad influences. See, and like my mother to the day still think that she blamed other people for what I was doing, but not knowing her son was the one who was really behind
it. Right.
But in actuality, she knows, and I influence a lot of people, but looking back on that now, that ain't nothing to brag about.
What was there every time you looked in the mirror, maybe with jewelry on or nice clothes, and didn't recognize the man you saw in the mirror?
No, I smiled when I would see that.
that was success for you, right?
Almost definitely.
You would say to yourself,
a false sense of success.
Yeah.
Now looking back, being 55 years old, looking back 19, 20 years old with all that, you know, it was cool back then. But looking back on it, no, it was destruction in the making.
So what was, and it's a twofold question, what was your biggest flex when you had all the money, you had the fame, you had the cars? What was your biggest flex? You know, I lived in the Midwest for a couple of years, and right. In the Midwest, there would be, every year it'd be like an annual event.
Right.
And all the dope boys, they would like, they flex was, right. You know, I put a new park in the community for the kids. I put new swings and all this stuff, or, you know, I put computers in the computer lab, or they knew they was destroying the community, but yet at the same time, their conscience said, I need to go back and give something to the community, especially the youth of the community, because, you know, I'm selling drugs to their mom, their dad, their aunties and uncles, but with this money, I still want to do something positive. Was it ever a time that you went to the community that you was destroying and said, let me do something to build it up?
I'm going to be honest. No, maybe gave a cookout.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Flyer Street, you know, we used to give cookouts all the time.
Right.
And maybe if we knew, I mean, one time, this guy, and he's deceased now. He died when I was in federal prison. His name, you know, was Charles. He stayed on your side. Charles, yeah, that used to cut hair.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember when his little girl died, right out there in Flyer Street, and they didn't have no way to pay for the funeral. So I'm like, you know, I'll pay for the funeral. And but when it came time for me to pay, his baby mama said, no, Dre, you know, we don't need the money. I think they got it from somewhere. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, when it came to a situation like that, you know, I didn't mind, you know, helping, but just doing stuff. And, you know, I look back on that, you know, it could have been more that, you know, I could have did. But you got to understand, I was young, too.
Right, right.
You know, I went to federal prison when I was 23.
Okay.
You know, got sentenced close to, you know, 40 years. So I was young, and then I don't shy away that I was dumb.
Okay.
I was extremely dumb, even though I had money. You know, I had the so-called glamorous stuff that's really nothing now. But I was dumb. You know, I was dumb.
So you mentioned that about paying for the funeral. Did you feel a sense of obligation over empathy? Meaning that maybe what I'm doing in the community probably caused this death? And so out of guilt, you paid for it?
No, I was willing to pay for it because I know they needed it done. And me and the father was cool. Me and the mother, you know, was cool. But no, I didn't, you know, no type of way drugs played a role in the little girl dying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was no shootout and nothing?
No,
like
no.
That. Okay. So when, let's talk about when the heat is on, when the heat got on you, when was there a time that you ever felt like, you know, it's close to me getting busted, or, you know, the pressure on me, the heat? How do you deal with two things, jealousy, and then when did you feel the heat from law enforcement coming on you?
Well, honestly, I never felt the heat from law enforcement, never. Now, jealousy, you know, in our community, I'm saying, you know, jealousy, that's normal.
So did you have law enforcement on your payroll?
No. But I'ma say that, you know, maybe it was officers that would come through the spot. All right now, y'all better get it together. But no.
No. Okay.
And some people do kind of allege that with me, because of other people's situation that has something to do with, you know, law enforcement. But, you know, I didn't.
So never feeling the heat. So never feeling the heat just mean like you can turn it up. You keep turning up because you don't
right.
feel that this could ever end. Did you have an exit plan, or you felt like, you know, I can rock like this forever?
Well, yes, I had an exit plan. I wanted to have a certain amount of money, and then I was going to give it up. But like I say, the heat, no, because, you know, I knew basically who I was dealing with, and, you know.
So basically, you really wasn't a corner boy anyway. You was actually the plug for many other people. You had a plug, but you was actually the plug.
Right. Oh, yes. I hadn't graduated, you know, from the corner, because like I say, the spot that I had run out by a person who run, I stopped even going around there. So, and, you know, the guys who was still around there, they stayed around there. But no, I had other people who, you know, would come to me, you know, for certain amounts. And so you can say, yes, I had a plug, but I also, you know, was somewhat, you know, the plug also.
Right.